Hi, and welcome to the 12th episode of the Language Mandarins podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today we have a special guest. Her name is Jessica Elliott. She's an online English teacher based in London, and her website is Sky Blue English. So welcome to the show, Jessica.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how is the English teaching going on online? How long have you been teaching?
It's going really well. I've been teaching online for about 4 years now. I've been teaching face-to-face for about 9 years. But yeah, the online teaching is about 4 years.
Okay, and do you teach exclusively online, or do you still do both in person and online?
Yeah, I still do both. I do probably about half-half, actually. And I quite like having the difference. I quite like going to my face-to-face classes and, you know, getting out of the house in a way. But then it's really nice doing the Skype classes as well. And it's really convenient. And I think it's really effective as well, actually.
Do you happen to do both options for the same student, or do you separate?
Yeah, generally people are usually quite clear, actually. Like I've got a Russian lady that I've been teaching for about 3 years, and she approached me specifically wanting Skype classes. And other students have kind of been the same, actually. They usually specify. And on my website, I've got both. So yeah, people usually specify which they prefer.
Okay. Have you had perhaps any, for the students who prefer offline, do they specify any reasons why, do they show some kind of hesitation to, they don't want to use the technology online, or they prefer just in-person contact? Do they express?
Yeah, they usually say, occasionally I've suggested kind of going online, and some people just don't really fancy it. But then, like, I had one student, a French lady, and she was living here. So first of all, we had face-to-face classes, and then she went to live in Switzerland, and she was kind of open to trying it. I think she was a little bit hesitant. But then when she went to Switzerland, she actually really kind of enjoyed the Skype classes and said that it was kind of almost as good. I think maybe it's not on par with face-to-face, because it's always nice to be kind of with somebody, but it's definitely very effective, yeah. Mm.
What do you find are some of the advantages of the Skype classes?
I think it's just so easy. You kind of save time, which is really good. And I actually have Italian classes through Skype, because I don't have that much time. I'm like just really busy. Like, it's either preparing classes or having classes or writing blog posts, kind of researching. So it works really well for me. Often it's a bit cheaper, which can be good. I just say it's kind of easier to fit into your day, and also the time, maybe if somebody wanted a class kind of quite early or quite late, that's easier. Like, I'd be more inclined to do a Skype class at 8 o'clock. If somebody wanted a class at 8 in the evening, I'd probably do Skype rather than face to face. So
for the practicality, I know traveling outside, commuting, it's a little bit easier to schedule a class that's on the beginning of the day or the end of the day.
And then of course for people that aren't in London, it's really good. Or like that student that moved to Switzerland.
And how is your experience taking Italian classes as a student? How has that kind of influenced your classes as a teacher?
When I started teaching English, I was in Spain, and so I was learning Spanish. And I think that experience of learning and teaching was, it was really, really beneficial just being on the other side. And I'm definitely kind of much more empathetic as a teacher because I know what people are going through. And like often people will say like that they know the grammar, but they just find it so hard to remember when they're speaking. And like I can completely understand that because the same thing happens to me. So yeah, I think it's kind of really important, I think, to be on the other side.
Yeah, I personally, I try to keep learning languages just all the time. My goal this year actually is to be starting a new language each week. So,
wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's based on Benny Lewis's 52, or not 52, but his challenge is a 1 week speak in a week challenge on his website. I'll post a link to the on the show notes, but his idea is start from scratch and just start speaking with a native speaker, just kind of jump into it. Yeah. And that learning experience really keeps me fresh and active and on my toes. Yeah. And it's true. I really empathize with a lot of the students to see what is challenging in terms of speaking, what's challenging in terms of writing, getting used to maybe a new system of writing. If they don't use the Latin letters, then I can understand how the English spelling is a challenge, or an English pronunciation, it's not phonetic. So that can be a big challenge when you compare other languages, because there's like at least 20 vowel sounds that we have in English, and you look at other Romance languages like Spanish or Italian, and you might have like 5.
Yeah, definitely.
So I really empathize now as a language learner to see what students experience, and that the more languages I start accumulating, the more I look at English as a foreign language, and it's really an interesting transition to put myself in the shoes of these other learners. And
definitely.
So when you were in Spain, were you you were learning Spanish, you were teaching English?
Yes, exactly. So I was having kind of one-to-one class Spanish classes each week, and then I was studying on my own as well. And of course, because I was living there, it's a bit different from now, because I don't have that much kind of opportunity to speak Italian. But there, like I was in Spain, and I was kind of speaking every day. So it was really good, kind of doing both together.
How do you feel was that learning abroad experience? Do you think it was very effective for learning Spanish?
Yeah, definitely. And I was living with Spanish people. It was quite challenging. And I have students at the moment that are kind of in the same situation. So there may be like one of my students has been here for about a year, and she's working with native speakers, living with native speakers. And, you know, it's quite hard, but it's a really good way to learn. Definitely, you're just being thrown in.
I've had a kind of a mix of experiences, because I lived in Paris for 6 years, and I've now been in Mexico City for over 7. And I would, when I compare the two experiences, I say like, well, I studied at the university when I was in Paris, and I had to speak very formally with my teachers. I had to work on very formal documents for the university, essays and those documents. So my French got really advanced. And when I started teaching business English there, a lot of my students gave me their formal documents that they wanted translated or to work on. So they forced me to really have a high level of French. Mm. But in comparison, in Mexico, I consider myself kind of a frustrated learner. I've been with Spanish for about 20 years, but in my daily life, most of the time because I'm teaching English, there's limited opportunities where I might be speaking Spanish with a taxi driver, cashier at the bank or the supermarket, a waiter or a waitress at a restaurant, maybe a receptionist at an office if I have a class. And it's very limited contact. And I don't feel that my Spanish has progressed as much as when I was in using French at a university or with very formal business communication. And so the living abroad experience can be very subjective. I think if you integrate yourself, it can be beneficial. Were you living with like flatmates?
Yeah, and I think that really, really helped, because as you said, like I was teaching English, so I was speaking English kind of every day, like for most of the day. But then when I went home, I was really like keen on learning Spanish, so I was making a big effort as well. And then like I made Spanish friends, so that helped. So yeah. But yeah, no, I definitely know what you mean.
Yeah, and I've seen this. I've been following some podcasts and blogs from Ollie Richards from his website, I Will Teach Your Language.
Yeah, I listened to that, him as
and,
well.
And one of the things he emphasizes is, well, you don't necessarily have to live in a foreign country. And I think he talks about his experience in Japan, where it was very overwhelming. And I really I understand that situation with my experience in Mexico, where if you don't fully integrate, if you don't make those opportunities happen, nobody's going to make those opportunities. Kind of, they're not going to give them to you. You have to go out of your way.
Definitely. And I think there's a lot that you can do when, like for me, learning Italian here. I mean, I'm not speaking, it's not the same as when I was in Spain, but at the same time, there's like now I've got better strategies for learning, and like using flash, like kind of digital flashcards more. And I think I know more about how to teach myself a language. Mm-hmm. So that's, it's like having good strategies, I think, is really important. Yeah.
Do you teach your students those same strategies?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's one of the nice things, is you can pass things on. And when you discover something like flashcards deluxe or Anki, like when mm-hmm. I started using that, I was like telling like everyone, like you have to kind of download the app. And yeah, definitely.
So what would be some of these resources, strategies that you would recommend to your students that have worked for you?
I think definitely the flashcards. I really like News in Slow Italian, and I use that kind of every day. I'm kind of using that at the moment. And there's an English site called Breaking News English, and I think that's really good. So there's a news story, and then the guy that runs the site reads the story in English, and then there's activities and exercises. So
yeah, I've come across that website before, and yeah, it's an excellent source. I don't know how much work it takes to develop each article, but for listeners who aren't familiar with this website, there's usually a short text from actual news. And then it's adapted to several levels. There's beginner, there's intermediate, there's advanced.
Yeah.
And it goes through a whole spectrum of exercises. There's reading comprehension, vocabulary exercises, grammar, fill in the blank, listening. Yeah. It's just kind of a whole buffet. I mean, for teachers, it's an excellent source to kind of get ideas for how to adapt some kind of a text or an exercise, and even for the students, it's wonderful for just, there's a whole variety of exercises that can be done with the same text.
Yeah, that is really, I really like that. And also, I think having a good dictionary is important. So I always suggest the Macmillan English Dictionary or the Oxford Learners Dictionary to my students, and I really like the definitions that they have and also the example sentences. So I think that's important. And another resource I quite like is she's called Shona, and she has a website called Perfect English Grammar, and that's just really clear. And I think like like when you're learning a language, it can be a bit confusing and complicated. And it's like anything that helps to kind of simplify it and break it down is definitely really beneficial. So I like her website for that.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree what you said about the dictionaries. The other day I was speaking with one student who primarily was doing translation and using bilingual dictionaries. And I said, if you really want to get from the intermediate to a lot more advanced, I would really strongly recommend getting just a monolingual English only dictionary. And she came back with this really positive feedback. It was almost like she'd given herself the best gift in the world.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was just so, it was so touching to see this, wow, this is a wonderful resource. I don't know why I hadn't decided to do this before. And now a lot of these dictionaries, I think a lot of students, they still get the idea that, okay, your paper, it's a book, it's old fashioned. But a lot of these dictionaries that are getting really advanced with the technology, they'll still involve a technology side. So you might get a CD-ROM. I mean, CD-ROM might be an old idea, but there's still a lot of technology where they might develop something to give you tips on your speaking, tips on your writing. They might have integrated different exercises. So don't completely write off dictionaries because they're online. They're still worth investing in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I remember quite a lot of students I was teaching kind of weren't, I didn't feel that they were using very good dictionaries and that the definitions weren't very clear. So I remember kind of sitting down one day and just doing some research, and it wasn't actually that easy to find the Macmillan dictionary. But then when I found it, I was kind of recommending it to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's a great resource. And and also, as you mentioned with the grammar websites, I think there's a lot of people who, as teachers, we specialize in one or two things, and it's excellent. You can find some teachers dedicated, I don't know, pronunciation, or another one on grammar, and it's really enjoyable to see that we're not competing with each other. We all seem to have something that we're specialized in, and we all find our niche. What do you feel that you mostly like to develop with your blog or with your newsletter? What are some things that you like to focus on?
I think because I actually studied art at college, so I went to Goldsmiths in London. And then I changed, and then I started teaching English, and I realized I really enjoyed that. But I've still kind of that my art background is really important to me. So I think teaching English in a visual way and making it like I love infographics and I love making it quite fun. So I think that's one thing. And I think just like with grammar, when it's visual, it can be a lot easier. I'd say kind of visual diagrams, infographics, I really like.
Do you happen to use Instagram?
No, I was actually, I've been hearing quite a lot about that recently. So I've kind of been thinking about it. I like Pinterest. I'm on Pinterest. Okay. But no, I haven't actually started with Instagram yet.
Yeah, I've heard some really good things. I was watching a webinar with Jennifer Nascimento, and her website is English Outside of the Box. And she was showing all these examples of how she's gotten an incredible amount of viewers and subscribers or people who follow her on Instagram. And she was showing all these techniques where she might have a photo, she might get engagement by asking people to relate. If she might put a grammar question, then she might give that feedback. And I was looking at this live the other day, and I was just really impressed in a comment from one potential student saying, "These explanations are excellent. I'm going to sign up for your classes now." And it almost sounded too good to be true. But when you look into all the engagement and the following, and I think if you really like doing infographics, I think there's a wonderful opportunity to use Instagram for that.
I quite like to get started with it. I kind of, I thought I, I thought it was just like kind of photographs. I mean, photographs are great, but I thought it was like just kind of people kind of taking photos of themselves, like selfies. And I didn't really realize it was like, it's like somebody was talking about kind of having quotes, how like quotes just work really well for them on Instagram. So yeah, and no, I think it could be interesting.
Yeah, I was completely in the same situation thinking like, isn't this just that platform where people put photos and they use a filter and that's it? But actually, there's also some other teachers. One teacher, I forget his name, unfortunately. I'll put the link in the show notes. But he's using it as a way to engage students with these really short 15-second videos, and it's incredible how much content you can get in 15 seconds. And to explain some vocabulary, explain some kind of a grammar concept, and it can be really compact. And there's a lot of ways to engage students with an infographic or just a photo and describe what's in the photo. Maybe a selfie, yes. So students can see who the teacher is. But there's actually a lot of creative ways to get used to it, and it's an extremely growing platform. From what I saw with the figures, that it like even more than Twitter, because I think Twitter people are still just sending links or bringing people from Twitter to their website with blog or a YouTube video, but I think on Instagram there's a lot of organic growth that kind of stays within that community, and there's a lot of engagement possibilities, I think. So I'm still a newbie for Instagram. I just signed up this last week, and I'm kind of testing it out. But I was very happy to see the results that Jennifer was talking about, to say that that there is a lot of growth opportunities and opportunities to experiment with engaging students with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was an interesting interview. I really like Pat Flynn's website, Smart Passive Income. I don't know if you know that one. And he was doing an interview with somebody who was saying that they'd had like amazing success with Instagram. So yeah, I think I just listened to that like 2 days ago. So then I was thinking, yeah, I should definitely try it.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely, if you can send me the link, we'll post
that. I'll send you the link.
So listeners can to find that as well. So yeah, there's a lot of great resources out there. It's just the hard thing right now is finding them or being aware of them.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what kinds of things do you like to share in your newsletters? I've heard good things about your newsletters.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the newsletter, actually. I think the last one was the 35th issue. What I do is I write a story, just like a story about my week. And then I have like glossary. So it's just like words that maybe people might have heard them, but might not be quite sure what they mean. And then I just give some tips, and then the phrasal verb of the week as well.
Nice.
And yeah, I think I was telling you in the email, I'm gonna have a podcast where I actually read the text, the story that I've written, and then go through the glossary, because a few people were saying it would be useful to actually kind of have an audio version. So that's going to be, I'm kind of aiming for the 1st of April for that.
Nice. Okay. So how should people sign up for that?
Just on the homepage, if you just scroll down a bit, people can just put their name and email in.
Okay. Yeah. And for people who are listening, what is the URL for your website?
So www.skyblueenglish.co.uk.
Okay. And if they want to sign up for classes, that's also through your website as well.
Mm-hmm. Or they can just email me. So it's jessica@skyblueenglish.co.uk.
Perfect. Okay. And what other projects are you working on currently? So you've got a podcast that you're working on, and you're focusing on Skype classes. You have offline classes.
Yeah, I'm quite busy with classes, actually. I'm also trying to grow the blog as much as I can. And then, yeah, because I'm also doing some kind of exercises with the newsletter, so that on my blog, so as well as having the audio version, people will also be able to do some exercises with the vocabulary, kind of fill in the blank. So, because I just thought that that would help, rather than it just being passive, people actually kind of, it'll be like an active exercise and people actually have to use the words for the exercise.
And how is that exercise? Is that kind of a static exercise that if you saw it one time, it would stay the same content, or is it dynamic?
No, it's static. But then because like I have a new kind of story each week, there'll be like a new exercise each week to do with that vocabulary. But I think it will be quite good because people have to put the word in and then check the answers at the end. So it's like you can basically keep on doing it. So it's like even if somebody's done it, they can go back to it. So yeah, I think hopefully it should be quite helpful.
Yeah, I guess I'll use this opportunity to plug a new project I'm working on. I've been programming in JavaScript, HTML, CSS for about 3 years now, and I've been developing a lot of dynamic exercises, and pretty soon I'm going to be getting a webinar up for teaching teachers to integrate some of these simple kinds of exercises. I think this would be probably a perfect example where if you had a glossary of vocabulary items, it could create a dynamic exercise and perhaps a growing list of vocabulary items. So I'll keep you posted if you're interested
in
integrating something like that.
Yeah, because I actually found it really hard to find like a kind of fill in the gap exercise that students could then check.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're on lots of websites, but I just found it really hard to find one. So in the end, I contacted a web developer, and she did it quite quickly for me, so it was mm-hmm. fine. But it's actually, I think there's a lot of teachers that kind of would struggle or are struggling with things like that.
Yeah, I started with using just a Blogspot website because it allowed just complete. You could put all the HTML, all the JavaScript, all the CSS in a post, and there was no problem with like the platform. It didn't break it at all. And now I'm transitioning into using WordPress, and I've seen a lot of people say no, using code in WordPress is very limited, very restrictive. But I have had testing it. I've had some positive results. So now I'm going to start getting this kind of webinar and this tutorial developed so that especially for teachers that want to integrate some of these kind of dynamic exercises, and also for independent learners who may not want to just use Memrise or Duolingo or some of those websites. If they want to, you can do it yourself on Memrise, but I still feel that there's a lot of more opportunities if people learn to code a little bit, and it's not too difficult if there's some guidance or some examples.
I think that's a really good idea, definitely.
I'll keep you posted. That should be coming up soon-ish. There's been some positive feedback from fellow teachers that would be interested in learning that. So, because we all have our websites, our blogs, podcasts, YouTube videos, we're getting spread out on all these different platforms. But it's really nice to get engagement within our own website and to kind of cross-pollinate okay, you looked at my blog post. Okay, let's test the vocabulary. Okay, based on this vocabulary, why don't you check out my video? And my video is over here on, and we kind of stay within the same website. I think there's a lot of great opportunities in the future if you can kind of add some kind of dynamic element to a website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's just one of the projects I'm working on too. But thank you very much for coming on the show. This has been a pleasure hearing about your teaching experience and the resources that you've shared. And so I would definitely recommend people should get in contact with you if they would like to take an English class. And
you. It's been really, I really enjoyed kind of being on your show and chatting about learning and teaching.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. So, and also, I mean, I have to say this because it's my podcast, but if people are interested in taking a lesson with me or finding more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website at HugginsInternational.com. That's HUGGINS International.com. Or you can send me an email at HugginsInternational@gmail.com. So thank you very much for listening, and we're looking forward to the next podcast.